This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is George Newbern, the voice of Superman.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. You know the rest.
Red, blue, yellow. Primary, but it works in a superhero-ish kind of way.
The future of Metropolis is in the hands of a Man of Steel. Superman.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 308 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, it's Liam. Liam, we have turned the calendar page here, at least on the original air date. We've turned the calendar page. Maybe this is 50 years from now, whenever now is, and you're listening to this in December. I don't know. But just in case you're listening to it on the original air date, we have turned the calendar page, and we have decided to head back to the sunny skies, not of Dakota, but the sunny skies of Metropolis instead, as we celebrate a exciting birthday for the Man of Steel, Big Blue himself, as we mentioned last week. He just turned 86 years old and doesn't look a day over 35, depending on who's drawing him. It's an exciting month here. And as we also mentioned last week, the amount of episodes that we have left that we've not touched yet are very, very, very few. So what do we do when we have very little original material to cover again? That's right. We go back to the well. Not with a best of episode, but no, we're going to look back with a re-review, and we're doing just that with some of the episodes that we covered nearly 5 years ago, and kind of looking back, seeing if we agree with our scores, would we change anything, and kind of giving these episodes a little bit more of a thorough look back as we celebrate a exciting birthday for the Man of Steel.
Absolutely, looking forward to it, and we're doing this with one of the first episodes of Superman we ever talked about on the show, as mentioned, and one that we actually paired with a different episode, so we didn't even get a full once over on its own. So we feel like we left quite a bit of meat on the bone here with the episode A Little Piece of Home, which is obviously a pretty monumental episode, as we'll get to, where it introduces the concept of kryptonite to the DCAU. So, you know, it starts here, and then eventually there's a giant piece of it in the center of the earth. So, as we just recently discussed in an episode of JLU. So it all started here, and excited to go back and revisit this one with fresh eyes.
That's right. As you mentioned, our original review, if you want to check that out, was a double featured episode back on episode 12 of the podcast. We originally dropped that episode on July the 1st, 2018, meaning, Liam, that's almost 6 years ago at this point. We're coming up on a six-year anniversary of our own episode here. But we looked at that episode, the entire episode, as you pointed out last week. We covered two full episodes. Total of 51 minutes, that original podcast. We were burning through that thing. I can't even imagine what we missed, what things we didn't touch on. And I'm excited to discuss that with you today as we take a look at some of those things that we may or may not have drilled down on back then. So excited to touch on this one, Liam. We will, of course, get the official IMDb synopsis, which we did not get for our original air date for this episode, A Little Piece of Home. Before we do, we will, of course, remind the folks at home that this episode aired originally here in the United States on the Kids WB on September the 14th, 1996, meaning we are coming up here on the 28-year anniversary of this episode's original debut in just a few short months. And of course, our official IMDb synopsis is brought to you, as it always is, by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today and subscribe. And not only can you get our entire podcast catalog, including episode number 12, which features our original review here, but it features all 307 other episode reviews, plus bonus episodes and spinoff podcasts, all of that in one convenient place. And when you subscribe, not only will you get our content, but you get access to the ongoing podcast, Jump on the Batwagon, which features our friends from Watchtower Database doing their own reviews of Batman and Superman. They're going through the DCAU just like us, but doing it in air date order. So they're checking that out sequentially that way. And then, of course, you also get the entire Tim Talk podcast, which also touched on all episodes of the DCAU, all in one convenient streaming location for your listening enjoyment. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today and subscribe.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for A Little Piece of Home, which is written by Hilary J. Bader, directed by Toshihiko Masuda, music by Christopher Carter, and animation by TMS. And that synopsis reads as such. Lex Luthor learns that Superman is vulnerable to kryptonite and attempts to use it to kill Superman. Well, not incorrect.
Which, as listeners will know from time to time, is accurate that we have IMDb synopsises that feature infactual information or just make up lies. So
yeah,
didn't lie sometimes is in the plus column.
Absolutely. As we get started, we see Lex Luthor is holding a press conference in front of a museum where he's proudly touting all of these new exhibits that he's personally paid for to be a part of this natural history museum, as Lois and Clark attending as reporters are sort of remarking to themselves that this is clearly more of a tax shelter as for Lex than something he's doing out of the goodness of his heart. But
things you miss as a kid watching this show.
Yeah, they're just straight up talking about like money laundering and tax shelters, which is really funny in a Saturday morning cartoon when you think about like this was airing next to like Freakazoid and Animaniacs. And actually both of those shows were very funny and very witty, so I shouldn't say that they wouldn't also have a tax shelter joke somewhere. But anyway, yes, as they're discussing it, there's an explosion inside the museum, which of course Clark hears with his super hearing. And as Lois begins to voice her opinion of why Lex is actually funding this museum exhibit.
As you know, recent cutbacks have forced the city to close the doors to many of its own museums, which is why the Lex Luthor Museum of Natural History is such a boon to the city's populace.
And a boost to Lex's popularity.
In anticipation of tomorrow's grand opening, I felt that you, the elite of the Metropolis Press, might enjoy a sneak preview of the city's newest state-of-the-art exhibition hall. The priceless artifacts are displayed in open cases, protected by electronic surveillance and an impregnable automated security system.
Did you hear that?
Just typical Luther Blarney.
And now, I will be happy to answer any questions regarding the museum and its displays.
How do you respond to charges that the museum is really just a large tax shelter for LexCorp? Let's see him get out of Kent?
She turns back around to see that Clark has disappeared. As Superman goes on the scene, we see two armed, or not, actually they're not armed, two thieves that have blown a hole into the floor of the museum through the sewers.
Tale is old as time.
And they have the magic gloves that make you not get shocked by electricity. I guess they're just rubber gloves. I don't know. But they're able to grab a diamond, and they think they're going to make their escape. But Superman arrives on the scene. We'll talk about the visuals. We get this like long shot of Superman where he like, instead of just going in through the front door, I guess it's because the next scene has to, this is one of those, because the next scene has to happen.
Right.
So he goes in through the through an open manhole cover, flies through the sewers, and up through the hole that the two robbers made with their explosion minutes earlier. And he's having a little bit of fun. He's getting a little cocky here, and he is playing with his food, so to speak. But as he begins to finally wrap things up and is ready to take these two criminals in, he begins to feel weak very suddenly and falls over so abruptly that one of the criminals is even kind of concerned for him and asks the other if he should help him or not. But they decide to leave. And as the doors are opened and the crowd and Lex and Lois see the remnants of this display that has now been robbed inside the museum, Superman tries to sort of apologize and explains that he doesn't know what happened exactly, but that he was too weak to stop them. And so Lex gets to kind of read him the riot act in front of everyone and tells him that next time he should call the police or someone else that can actually do something about it. So it becomes clear in the next scene that Lex is going to review the security tapes here, and he and Mercy notice that as soon as Superman got close to a particular glowing green rock on one of the display cases, that's when he fell over, and that's where we get our inciting incident, where Lex is now on the case of finding out just what this green rock is. And we have a scientist. We're just chock full in this episode of scientists to explain what this rock does. So first up is Lex's personal brainiac here. Not that one. Actually, Brainiac is Lex's personal brainiac, as it turns out. But his personal vague scientist, Professor Peterson, is here to alert us that it must be this this particular irradiated rock.
The other media samples were ordinary carbon-based elements, but this, its composition materials are not even on the periodic table.
We believe it originated in an alien solar system with properties totally divergent from our own.
We'll need to test it out on Superman himself. See that it's in my office within the hour.
I don't think you realize what you have here.
On the contrary, I know exactly what I have here. The very tool I need to completely control and humiliate Superman.
But surely the rock would be more valuable to mankind.
You work for me, Peterson. Don't forget that. There shouldn't be an opinion in your head that I haven't put there.
Yes, Mr. Luthor.
So Clark goes back to the museum to sort of test his theory that his own theory, using his own investigative reporter skills, I guess, to check out to see what could have possibly made him feel so weak. And he notices that he's standing around. There's lots of things that are happening. It's a bustling museum. People are excited to visit the new Lex Luthor Museum of Natural History. Mm-hmm. As there's a tour guide giving her own tour of the area.
A little bit of foreshadowing for the end of the episode.
Correct. Yeah, you got to have the Chekhov's lead goblet.
Yeah,
the lead goblet. Yes, is overheard in the background. But Clark is investigating the display, and as he puts his hand up to test to see if the rocks will once again make him feel weak, nothing happens this time. And despite one of the chidings of a passerby, an older lady who asks him if he thought they were going to dance for him, is that, you think that's a Star Wars reference? Is that like a, you know, like a use the force? It wasn't overtly obvious here, but
I don't know. I just thought it's like a very classic, like, like something you would see in like Ghostbusters or some other like 80s comedy. Sure. where you know, whatever's going on in the main story, some character actor would just walk by and just give a one-liner and then walk off. Like,
that's true. Good point. Could just have been that. Clark disappointed that the rocks aren't making him feel weak or confused, at least. And then the exposition guard shows up and drops a little bit of knowledge on Clark, explaining that he liked the rocks they had there previously, and that when he got in there this morning, they had changed the entire display around, which gives Clark his little stroking of his chin there. And that's where we learn that the rocks were removed because Lex is interested in getting his scientists to break down what exactly these rocks are, where they came from, what they're made of, and why they made Superman weak.
Yes. Once it's been revealed here that Professor Peterson is Lois Lane's inside source at LexCorp, or at least one of her sources. She takes this little piece to a diner where Clark is waiting, still feeling a little shaken up, and actually starts to feel even worse as soon as Lois arrives, because as it turns out, she has a small sliver of the meteorite in question, which she tries to hand to Clark, and he's unable to even hold it. And they have a little bit more of a discussion, and she decides she's going to take it to Professor Hamilton at Star Labs, and she decides to grab her food to go, and then tells the
Before we skip past that, I think I discovered the answer to why Superman in Justice League Unlimited makes Lois the turkey dinner with grapes and celery on top of the roof with the orange soda.
Uh-huh.
It's because she eats heavy. Did you hear the order that she gets in this?
So what'll it be?
I'd like the turkey meatloaf, baked potato, no butter, no soup, salad, house dressing on the side, give the whole thing legs. Sorry, Kent, I'm in a hurry. Say, you don't look so hot.
I'm fine. What's the rush?
Take a look at this.
Ah. Careful!
I'm sorry. Just clumsy, I guess. What is it?
Lex Labs got a hold of some kind of meteor that seems to have the ability to drain Superman's powers. This is just a small sliver. You sure you're not catching something?
I'm okay. Really.
I'm taking this piece over to Star Labs to let them have a look at it. I'll let you know what they say. The gentleman would like a large orange juice, chicken soup, and tea with lemon. You gotta take care of yourself, Smallville.
Yeah, you really don't look so good.
She gets meatloaf and potatoes and something else.
It's a heavy protein and heavy carb diet. She's just running all the time now. So she works it off, I guess.
Burns those calories. That's right.
That's right. But she as she's leaving, she tells Clark to take better care of himself, and tells the waitress to bring him some chicken soup. And we get the now recurring bit of someone walking up to Clark and or Superman and telling him he doesn't look so good from the waitress this time. Meanwhile, Lex has decided that they're going to further test this kryptonite poisoning that seems to be affecting Superman, and they go to a thief for hire, I guess, named Joey. We find out a real alpha bro. This guy would have a YouTube channel now. That's abundantly clear to me.
Instagram account. Yep, he's probably claimed that he eats clean, but it's gonna come out that he's actually been taking steroids.
Yeah. One of those raw meat guys.
Yeah, absolutely. All he does is eat ground beef raw.
But yes, he's a bit over the top, and tries to flirt unsuccessfully with Mercy as well. But they decide they're going to lure Superman into a trap. This Joey guy, he's not so sure he wants to take a job in Metropolis, knowing that Superman is there. But Lex assures him that that's all part of the plan. And so after we cut to this building where there's some jewels being stolen by Joey and his two accomplices, and the director of the exchange tells them, or the commissioner, I should say, tells them, well, all the doors are locked. There's no way out of this building. And so, of course, they have jetpacks, and they all fly off into the sky and lead Superman on a bit of a merry chase. They all have like their own different weapons. They have like a They have there's a fire guy and a rope guy.
Mm-hmm.
And after a long chase, we get to the next, we finally, he's able to take down the two other thugs. Meanwhile, all the time, Lex is clearly leading him on a specific route to this sky rise, where as they arrive, and seemingly Joey is going to give up his ill-gotten gains and allow himself to be arrested by Superman, we see that the Kryptonite has actually been suspended in a light bulb above the room there. And of course, Superman immediately gets weak, and Joey, not being able to leave well enough alone, decides he's going to show off a little bit of his boxing training and begins to knock Superman around a little bit. But unfortunately, he knocks him out of the center of the room, which allows Superman to have enough strength to grab him by the lapels and pull them both out of the sky rise. And then they just fall.
I guess I flown myself into a corner. Okay, you win. I give up.
That's right. Make him come to you.
Here. What's the matter? Don't you want it? Here! Gee, I'm sorry. Here, let me help you up. Hey, I guess all that time in the gym is paying off. Jab! Jab! Cross! Uppercut!
What are you doing? Get him back to the center of that room!
Maybe I'd rather just finish him off right here.
Get the rock fast.
And luckily there's some water here, because otherwise that guy would have been dead, because Superman does not catch him.
Very
or
dead.
Begin, or himself. He doesn't fly away. They both land in this ravine, and Joey, I guess, they're able to get away, but Superman pulls himself out of the ravine, and once again Bibbo walks up to tell him that he doesn't look so good, and, as is now I think number three in the episode of someone telling him that. And we cut from there to Luthor after he has Mercy return the Kryptonite to him, as they begin to make seemingly are making their next move here. But first, Superman comes to have a little face-to-face confrontation with Lex.
That's right. He tells him that he's not going to bow to him, essentially. By the way, we'll talk about it in visuals, but I could not see Hollywood's Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Lex Luthor in the scene. Like, it is uncanny how similar they are. But anyway, we'll get to that in visuals. Superman pulls up. He knows he's up to something. He knows that Luthor set the trap, and Luthor offers him a deal. He says that he's gonna, you know, he'll make sure he doesn't kill Superman if Superman leaves him alone. And Superman says he can take that kryptonite and shove it, in so many words. So, unsurprisingly, there our really good superhero says no to being evil. So,
if you'll excuse us. Actually, I'm glad you came. I have a deal to offer you.
I'm listening.
As long as I have the rock, you can't stop me. But it is bothersome to have you always trying. So, the deal is this. You leave me and my operations alone, and I and my little green rock will leave you alone.
I don't make deals with criminals.
I control everything in this town, Superman. Your cooperation is not really necessary. The offer was merely a courtesy.
You will never control me, Luthor. Never!
Well, then, I guess I'll have to kill you.
It's kind of the redux of the scene they have at the end of Last Son of Krypton, I guess. Of Lex sort of offering him I guess instead of offering to work together this time, he's sort of offering them a sort of a more mafia style, like, you stay in your territory and I'll stay in mine offer. So
yep.
A little bit of a different negotiation tactic this time. But yes, unsurprisingly, Superman not interested.
Still modeled after perhaps The Last Temptation of Christ or one of those other, mm-hmm. you know, your hero, the goodest of good is tempted by the pure evil man to bow the knee. But because he's incredibly wholesome and good, he declines regardless of the mm-hmm. fact that it may put him in mortal danger. So from there, we cut back to Star Labs, where Lois has shown up, and Professor Emil Hamilton, first time we've talked about Emil in some time, are there to sort of break down and do their own research. Emil Hamilton just keeps throwing out superlatives with regards to kryptonite. He can't believe it. It's just, he's incredulous about this little tiny piece of rock. It's all that he can do is just react over and over again. Wow. Amazing. Incredible. I lost count of how many adjectives he uses there. So he's just super excited. He's real, real happy about this amazing scientific discovery. Superman shows up and hopes that they are able to kind of give him some information about it. So Professor Hamilton breaks it down, explains to him that the reason why it's likely causing Superman to feel ill is not only that it came from Krypton, but is actually pieces of Krypton themselves that were affected by the radiation that caused the explosion of the actual planet itself. And they arrived on Earth in or around the same time that Superman himself arrived on Earth. So
interesting.
My contact at Lex Labs thinks it isn't even from this solar system.
Incredible. What? Oh. No, that certainly would be in keeping with my theory.
Which is what exactly, Professor?
The fact that your body chemistry absorbs the radiation so readily leads me to believe you share with it a point of origin.
You mean it came from Krypton?
More than likely it is Krypton, or rather a small piece of it. Kryptonite, if you will. The green radiation could have been created by the energy released in the cataclysmic explosion which destroyed your planet. There is one bit of potentially helpful data. Its radiation can be shielded by element atomic number 82.
There.
Lead.
Which I kind of like. You know, you break down it scientifically. We understand it's logically makes sense. You know, radiation poison kills human beings. So mm-hmm. in this case, radiation poison is going to kill Superman, but it's a very specific type. And Superman, however, is happy to learn through at least some of his experimentation that Dr. Hamilton was able to, or Professor Hamilton was able to uncover one thing that could potentially shield it from, shield the radiation from Superman, that being lead. So Superman mm-hmm. is able to actually catch and hold the piece of kryptonite as it is encased in a lead box. From there, we get Lois receives a phone call from her inside source, Professor Peterson, who asks her to meet him at the museum, which, listen, I'm not a journalist, but if like my inside source was telling me to meet me at the museum because that's the place that I need to meet, I would smell a trap right away. But
yeah, you would think maybe the common act would be to meet in a very public place,
right?
Like a, you know, a diner or a or some other public, a coffee shop, something like that. But
not at a museum after hours.
No, but hey, maybe the idea is, you know, Lex has eyes everywhere except for apparently his museum after dark.
That's right. Which we learn actually that, to your point, is true. He's got a lot of eyes everywhere. We saw a lot of them on the ground in and around this whole trap that he set up with the jetpack guys. So Lex has a firm grip on this city. So who's to say? I guess the most obvious place would be maybe the safest place in this case. Mm-hmm. So Lois decides that she is going to go to the museum. Superman accompanies her. They arrive. And after Superman does a quick scan of the museum, he sees that no one is inside.
We should mention no one's inside because Professor Peterson, of course, as it's revealed, was doing this as at the behest of Lex this time. And that it's not so subtly implied that this is the end of Professor
Peterson. Listen closely. Lex Labs is developing a synthetic version of the Green Rock. It's imperative I get this information to Superman immediately.
Yes, of course. Where should we meet?
The museum. Come in through the alley entrance.
But the security system.
I designed the security system, Ms. Lane. I know how to bypass it. The door will be open between 9:05 and 9:06. Make sure you're not followed.
Very convincing. You're certain he's there?
Our man saw him go in 2 minutes after the Lane woman.
Excellent. Superman will now insist on accompanying her to the museum. Ah, Professor. Mercy will see you safely home now, won't you, my dear?
Please, no. I mean, I can see myself home. Really.
But I insist. Metropolis can be such a dangerous city, Peterson. I'd hate to wake up tomorrow and find out that something terrible had happened to you.
Lex insists that Mercy drive Professor Peterson home, noting that he knows what a dangerous city Metropolis can be, and he'd hate to read in the papers tomorrow that something terrible had happened to him. And then the scene cuts to the museum, as mentioned. So he gone.
He's likely no longer with us. Presumed dead, as the DCAU wiki might say. So the museum itself is empty after Superman does his scan and realizes that he cautions Lois to not go in, but wouldn't you know it, she's already gone. She's wandered in and she's looking for the professor, calling out to him. Superman follows right behind her, and they find themselves in the middle of the museum, right where the display was before. And of course, the giant dinosaur display. And just as as Superman realizes that they've walked into a trap, as the dinosaur, it's not just a dinosaur statue, it's a giant T-Rex robot. Controlled, of course, by our main villain, Lex Luthor. What a tremendous bit here. He's just back in his office with a little couple of joysticks and remote controlling this T-Rex around the I'd like to know, like, what went into that? Did he decide one day he was just like, yes, I want part of my display to be a remote control robot T-Rex that I can control for my office. Make it happen.
Know when you might need one of those, you know? It would be one thing because we see the dinosaur like a couple of times when the thieves are breaking in at the start and when Clark is walking around. It's in the background the whole time. Mm-hmm. But it's not established that, like, it's an animatronic display that moves and has sounds and all this stuff. And then it's like, oh, it doesn't just like open and close its mouth, it actually moves. Like, that would be kind of a fun reveal. But yeah, as it stands, it just starts moving all of a sudden, and
I guess
Lex is controlling it from his weird little joystick computer.
I guess Lex, at the very beginning, there's this sort of throwaway line that he talks about how the security system is impenetrable, so maybe it was just one of the things he wanted. That, like, we see that he can see through the eyes, or the eyes are cameras, so maybe he thought that would be a well and good deterrent for people to break in if somebody has the ability to control a giant mechanical robot T-Rex. I don't know. that could be all headcanon. Who knows? It's definitely not explained that way. But yes, the dinosaur comes to life, goes after Lois. Superman steps in between them and appears like he's going to make mincemeat of this, or I guess it would be like robot meat of this of this giant T-Rex. But wouldn't you know it, out of the T-Rex's mouth spills a giant hunk of kryptonite. And immediately, of course, Superman is weakened. In the meantime, giant doors begin slamming down in and around. There's the security system slamming down in and around the entire display, trapping our heroes. Superman's able to stop one of the doors, but unfortunately, Lois is not able to get the kryptonite out of the room quick enough. So he loses his strength. The door closes, and it's not looking good for our Man of Steel here, as he's quickly thrown around the room by the dinosaur. Lex appears to have the upper hand. Superman calls out to Lois for a change, asking for help, and instructs her that she needs to get rid of the kryptonite. And then, wouldn't you know it, Chekhov's lead goblet comes into play as Superman remembers that the tour guy that was leading the tour mentioned that this, whatever the race was, died of lead poisoning.
Two annoyances with one stone.
Only we had some lead.
Entire civilization was destroyed by systemic metallic poisoning.
The cups. They're made of lead.
Off. She aims. She shoots. Two points.
Chekhov's basketball. Also, by the way, we missed the scene. One of the initial scenes, Lois is sort of sitting there thinking and waiting for Professor Peterson to talk, and she's sitting in at her desk playing trash can basketball.
Mm-hmm.
With her papers. So Lois sees an opportunity to put her skills to work. She was proficient from the computer chair, and she's looking to translate those skills to real life with a kryptonite rock and a lead goblet. So she goes, is able to eventually get to the kryptonite, sort of backing up into it, realizes her one shot is to make an incredible three-pointer, although she only gives herself 2 points from way downtown. And wouldn't you know, despite rolling around the rim for a few seconds, it eventually goes in, not quite sealed, but at least protecting Superman somewhat from the radiation. This allows Superman to recover relatively quickly, and despite getting beat around just a little bit more, he's eventually able to overcome the robot and tears its upper jaw completely from its mouth in a really, really memorable, brutal scene. I mean, I guess we'd probably talk about it in visuals, but most of this scene is in the opening credits. So it's memorable for multiple reasons, but Superman is able to defeat the robot, but of course he owes his life to Lois saving him for a change. So as they get out of the museum, he says that he owes Lois one for a change, and that she asks for a one-on-one with him to kind of clear the air, give some information, an exclusive interview for the Daily Planet. Superman agrees, but requests that she leave out one little factoid, that being not writing about the kryptonite rock, clearly looking to protect that that weakness so that that doesn't get out there. Back in the office, Lex is furious, smashes his computer in anger, smashing the controller for the Tyrannosaurus Rex, and is left there frustrated. And we get what is really, honestly, to me, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, this is a Marvel post-credits scene. Like, mm-hmm. this is what we would see modern day would be after the credits or mid-credits scene. And that is, we see that out in some desert, the Lex Luthor Museum of Modern History teams are out excavating, looking for rocks and jewels and gems. And we locate one guy who comes up very excitedly with a rock to the to someone else. And the guy says, no, it has to be green. It has to be green.
No, green. It has to be green.
And then we cut to another, just not too far away, what appears to be yet another chunk of kryptonite sitting close by. So we see that Lex has made it a priority for his teams to find more and more of this kryptonite. And that's where we wrap up the episode, Liam. So just as a reminder, so when we do these re-reviews, we're not going to rescore. We'll mention what our original scores were, mm-hmm. and then we'll kind of break down, hey, do we agree with it? Would we give it a different score if we could rescore it? But our original scores for plot, I gave plot a 7 and you gave plot an 8. Mm-hmm. Where do you sit now that we kind of broke it down a little bit more? We're sitting here talking about it. We're looking at it through a more critical lens. You agree with yourself? Would you give it a higher or lower score? Where are you sitting?
I think I would keep it at an 8. I really like this episode. I think it's one we saw a ton of, mm-hmm. both in reruns. And I think we it's funny. We just shared this clip on our socials a couple of weeks ago. There was a marathon of the first 6 episodes of Superman that aired on Cartoon Network that was hosted by Space Ghost Coast to Coast. So we were kind of reminiscing about that, but this was one of the episodes we had that we taped from that marathon. So I feel like I've seen this episode so many times, but coming back to it now after several years, probably not since the last time we reviewed it, have I watched it. I think it's really good as far as especially the thriller, reporter intrigue with Lois and her source trying to work to expose Lex and sort of just how devious Lex is throughout all of this. You know, I love that scene. Anytime you got Superman floating in front of the LexCorp to have kind of for them to go toe to toe and is great. And then the ending, look, it's pretty silly that he fights a giant dinosaur. but also I'm not gonna complain that Superman fought a dinosaur. We'll talk about that more in visuals in a second. The only parts that I thought were kind of like a little bit over the top were they really felt like they didn't trust you to remember the lead thing.
Because
they have Hamilton tells him, and then as they're running around in the museum getting attacked by the dinosaur, Lois is like, if only we had some lead.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Superman who looks over at the display, and then he visualizes the tour guide, and we hear her words again about how this, in this tribe had died of lead poisoning or whatever. And it's like, Lois, the cups are red. Like, they really hit you over the head with it. Which, again, it's a kid's cartoon at the end of the day. Maybe just the idea is Superman wouldn't have thought of that, but then Lois said lead and that triggered his memory, which triggered this. Mm-hmm. But I would have just assumed had him looked up and been like, and just we could have ascertained that he remembered the tour guide from earlier. I guess she didn't specifically say lead earlier, but I feel like you could have, again, I'm being a little nitpicky here, but other than that scene, I think it's a pretty darn good episode as far as still early on in the run here, but establishing, Lex as this completely domineering force, and also establishing Superman as sort of his ultimate foil, because for the simple reason that unlike pretty much everyone else in this episode, from the thieves to Peterson to Mercy to, to whoever else, he cannot manipulate this guy. Mm-hmm. And how frustrated that makes him, I think, is really good. So you're putting this feels like a big building block episode for just the overall Lex Superman rivalry as well. So I think there's a lot of good stuff in it, even if the last act is a little silly.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would probably give this, I feel bad saying I would give this an 8 because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I hate to waver over a single point. Like, if we went from 5 to 10, that would be one thing, right?
Right.
We've talked about that a few times where we're like, oh my gosh, this was a miscarriage of justice. We gave the music a 6 when it's a 9 or something in the few re-reviews that we've done. But I would probably stand pat at a 7, but I think there are some things that I didn't necessarily or probably didn't appreciate then like I do now. I looking back with as many episodes that we've covered since here and the entire arc of Lex going from this version of Lex where he's the shady rich businessman that's pulling the strings and is not openly a criminal. Like, everyone knows he's a criminal, but he's not openly the criminal, versus what he ends up being at the end of Justice League Unlimited. I really miss this version of Lex, because it adds such another dynamic to the relationship between Superman and him, because obviously with Lex being an open air criminal, Superman can bring him to jail. He's arrested. There's not that tension of like, he's going to continue to be able to do what he's doing. Whereas in this, Superman knows he's responsible, but he can't pin anything on him. That was the whole thing with the Superman, the arc from Superman, the animated series, was all of Lex is evil, but Superman has to, like, because he's good and just, and there has to be, like, and Lex is corrupt and is able to use his money to corrupt other people. Superman has to just kind of put up with it. So there's that tension of just like, well, how this never ending battle, like he's always going to be butting heads. So I do kind of miss that aspect of it. I really liked how the dynamic is flipped, and obviously, we've seen this, like you said, we've seen this episode countless times, but the dynamic flipping of Lois being the one to save Superman for a change.
Yeah, really absolutely. Cool.
And this is early on in the show too. So it's not as if this was, but it's early on in the show. So we haven't seen 1,000 versions of this, but anyone who knows these characters knows that that's the dynamic. Typically, Lois is the damsel in distress, and Superman, or in traditionally, I shouldn't say modern day, Lois is like a badass that's, pretty dynamic. But the fact that this show was from the get-go is like, this Lois is tough. She doesn't need, like, she don't need no man to like save her. She actually is going to do the saving sometimes. Like, she'll have her fair amount of situations where Superman catches her off a falling building or what have you, or steps in to save her, because that's classically how these characters are. But she's also able to fend for herself. She's helping Superman. She actually saves Superman from death here, because Kryptonite can typically kill somebody or kill him. So, I like that dynamic was switched, and that was something that they did early on here to establish that it's not going to be the same old.
Yeah, I think that's something that's always the best versions of Lois Lane, I think, understand that her being so fearless is this double-edged sword, where yes, it gets her into trouble that only Superman can save her from. It gets her thrown out of buildings and planes and down elevator shafts and whatever else, but it also means that when a giant dinosaur is attacking Superman, she's still, she still sees what needs to be done and is going to do her best to get it done, because she has that fearless streak in her. So it's like, that to me is like so integral to the best versions of Lois Lane are, of where she, she's like a small dog who doesn't quite know how big she is, picking on the Rottweiler or whatever. Like, she will pick a fight that she can't win sometimes, but also her fearlessness allows her to be in a situation like this one where she can actually save his bacon for a change. So yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah. So that was really enjoyable. I just also like being back in this early first season of Superman. It's so fun. We'll talk about it here in just a second, but visually things look great. Like, it's these stories are just so unique. And the late great Hillary J. Bader wrote another really, really fun one here, in a way that she decided to introduce Kryptonite. And I really, really enjoyed it. So probably wouldn't give it much higher than a 7, maybe bordering on an 8, but I'll probably stick with my score here. But still, good to know that we still agree with ourselves. We gave it a high score, high-ish score that in our original review, and we're kind of sticking to it here. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be visuals and animation. So our visuals and animation here, done by TMS, of course, legendarily good animation team, and they did a ton of these early Superman episodes, if I'm not mistaken, right? Because they were. Correct. They were focusing mainly on doing this stuff, which is why the new Batman Adventures ended up getting that redesign, right? So, so those other studios could do it. So TMS, unsurprisingly, a lot of really, really neat things here in the episode. Like I said, starting right off the bat, I can't not see Lex Luthor looks like Dwayne The Rock Johnson so much.
He's very like, even for this show, like everybody's very beefy in this. Oh. Like he's got such a wide, thick jaw. And yeah, obviously the ball head and the sort of, again, it's funny. They've talked about, the creators of the show talking about not realizing that a lot of people thought that Lex Luthor was African-American because... Right. They gave him sort of a little bit of a darker skin tone than your normal Caucasian guy. And of course he's based on Telly Savalas, I believe is the actor's name.
Mm-hmm.
Who's in some of the James Bond films, but
I think he's a Greek actor.
Correct. Yeah. So I think they were trying to give him like an olive skin, but as you pointed out, that was, there's not an uncommon theory, not totally dissimilar from Nick Harvey Dent had the same questions back in the original B-Test run. But yeah, he's just so that scene where him and Superman are coming almost literally nose to nose. Mm-hmm. They're just both so big and square, and yep. It's just great.
they fill up the whole screen. Like they mm-hmm. both of their faces get cut off because they're just so big and beefy. I love the TMS early episode Supermans. Like when you get later on in the season when TMS was, I guess, splitting off or wasn't doing as many episodes, and you kind of get some of those episodes where Superman's a little skinnier, slimmed down. I prefer my Superman big and beefy. You can quote me on that. And I think it's more of the Ed McGuinness style, like that big square, muscly, giant square head. Everything in that opening scene with him taking on the two thieves is really great. I love the bit, like you said, he goes in and around and retraces their steps through the sewers and then up through the hole. And then he's just kind of flying around and has his hands at his chest, you know, his cape's flowing behind him, but he's flying. He's like 3 inches off the ground, just moving it at faster than a speeding bullet to cut them off over and over again, having a lot of fun with it. I love that little sequence there. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of like little neat visual things that they do because of Clark's sickness, his illness, and the way he feels, he's affected by the radiation. That it's a very visually interesting episode, and little subtle things, whether it's him reaching his hand out towards the rock to see if it's going to affect him after they've switched the kryptonite out, or when Lois has the little sliver of kryptonite and tosses it to him, and he like hot potatoes it back to her because he can't hold it. There's a lot of great visual stuff, and that's not even including the finale that involves Superman fighting a giant robot Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah, this is a real like TMS is showing off episode, I thought. even just like I kind of mentioned it, I think, during the plot recap, but this opening sequence where, like I said, the guys break into the museum, and then we have this long sort of shot where we track Superman flying out from behind the building, going down through the manhole, and then he kind of weaves through a couple of the sewer tunnels before he arrives there. Really, really good. The jetpack flying sky chase is really fun.
Incredible.
The way the fire, when the one guy has like the blowtorch weapon or whatever, the way the fire is animated so fluidly. It's one of those things, and we've talked again with some of the people that worked on these shows, and one of the things they mentioned is, you could give things to TMS or Spectrum or some of these other studios they worked with that you just wouldn't trust another studio to pull off. And so you would, and that's not to say that they didn't have their own strengths, but that, you know, there were certain things that you would be willing to put in your episode, put in your storyboards, because you knew it was a TMS episode. And I think this is one of those, that whole chase sequence. And then when he sort of flies up and grabs a hold of the torch, and we see sort of the gas build up, and then it explodes, and the, you know, the jetpacks go flying and all of that. Him catching the helicopter right at the start there, tossing it. I think this is probably the first helicopter toss, but certainly not the last, into Metropolis River in this series. And and then, yes, as you mentioned, that whole final bit. Again, a lot of it feels extra iconic to me, as you mentioned, because a lot of clips from this episode are used in the title sequence.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the bit of him, you know, where the dinosaur is about to grab Lois and he like runs in and shoves her out of the way. The bit where at the end where he catches the jaw as it's about to bite down and then unhinges the top part of its head, really good. Him throwing like the piece of the bone from the other dinosaur skeleton and it impales the thing in the chest. Again, as always, we mentioned, anytime you had a synthetic being of any kind, they were going to dismember it in some sort of horrifically violent way you could never do to a living creature. So the dinosaur gets it pretty bad by the end
here. I love that it tears when he impales it too, with that, with the walrus tusk or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
Or the woolly mammoth tusk, I guess is what it's supposed to be. Mm. It like tears the skin off of the chest and you kind of see the exoskeleton underneath of it. Really, really neat detail. Like you could have just easily just had like a hole there, but the fact that they were like, oh, we're going to include this little detail here where you can actually see the skeleton, like the metal skeleton of the robot Tyrannosaurus Rex, so good.
Yeah, that's a great detail. And even as you said, they set it up earlier because she's playing like rolled up pieces of paper basketball in the office, but the very like, you know, like the end of any sports movie, any basketball movie, where she throws it up and it hits the rim and sort of rolls around the edge of the tin before it drops in, is a really nice little touch. Like I said, it's just like a lot of little flourishes and things in motion where you maybe with another studio would cut the shot a little quicker to make it feel more dynamic, but you didn't really have to because it's a TMS episode. So they could just pull off these really fluid movements that maybe some other studios couldn't. So yeah, this is just a hoot.
So originally our scores were 7 and 7, by the way. We both gave this a 7. Wow. I think I would probably go closer to an 8 or a 9. Like this is one I would probably give a 9 based on just some of the sequences here. Again, this is early on where we were like, oh, that can't be a 10. We can't give things that high score. Like, we got to wait until they're the really good episodes to get, like, no. Like, in hindsight, I probably would have given, based on that sequence alone, the chase sequence is really fun, too. I love the chase through the skies. You mentioned you have each of the two guys that flank our main guy. One has a flamethrower that looks really, really cool when he shoots it off. Of course, TMS mm-hmm. animates fire better than anybody else. So, of course, it looks mm-hmm. really interesting, really neat. It's Superman like bursting through the fire. And then the guy with the like contraptions that contain Superman, he shoots a whole bunch. They're like bolas.
The mummification.
Yeah, they're like, whatever they are, it just shoots a bunch of them at Superman. They tie him up. He starts to drop. And then you get that shot of him just bursting out with his arms and the stuff shooting off.
Yeah.
Like, I was super impressed with that. But then they follow that up with the guy shooting another one of those contraptions at Superman. He catches it, twirls it, and hurls it back at the guy, and it hits him like all in one fluid motion. I was like, only TMS could animate that so well. It looks incredible. So that whole sequence is great. I loved actually they went out of their way to kind of introduce, I don't know, is this Mercy's first episode or is it just the episode where they were really trying to establish her? She's in Last Son of Krypton.
She's at least seen. I don't know if she speaks in that episode, but
they were really trying to hammer home that she's not someone that likes to be hit on and not someone that you want to mess with. Not only is she the one who ultimately is charged with taking care of Professor Peterson, but you know, when we're introduced to our gun for hire Joey, he first thing he does is attempt to hit on her, and she nearly kicks his head off, instead kicking the punching bag off of its off of its apparatus. So I loved that little bit there. They really went out of their way to make her very intimidating and kind of a scary scary force that really, really showing that Lex's power goes far beyond just like the corporate world or whatever, you know, whatever other espionage he's into. But his bodyguard is no one to mess with either. So
yeah. Yeah. Actually, I just checked it. I think this is her first episode. Actually.
Ah, well, okay. So
that's probably why she got a little more focus here. But
that makes sense then. But yeah, I think I would probably change my score from a 7 to a 9 if I had the opportunity to redo so. It's really, really strong. I think the last little bit with the kryptonite, I love the bit where Lois is kind of like backing up on her, you know, she falls to the ground and she has to backpedal sort of while she's sitting down. And then she stumbles upon the kryptonite rock. That little sequence is great too. Mm-hmm. Not to mention like everything that happens in that sequence with the T-Rex, with the tail whipping Superman out at the last second, or Lois having to dart past. And, you know, she's sort of playing football and basketball. She's not dribbling. So that, I guess that's why it reminded me of football, but she's sort of dodging and juking out of the way of the tail before she throws the long free throw into the cup at the end. But just a really fun sequence. And then the way that the kryptonite rolls around the lid and falls in and all that, really, really good. So yeah, I'd give my score an upgrade if I could.
Yeah, I think I'd be in 9 or 10 territory for this one. I just think those two action beats we get are so strong, and the general look of the episode is just so good overall. And like I said, yeah, I like how big and blocky all the Lex and Superman are in this episode. So yeah, there's just a lot of good stuff. Like you said, so early on in the show, it really feels like they were trying to come out swinging with like a really spectacular display, and they pulled it off.
Absolutely. All right, William, let's move on to our next category, and that's going to be music. Christopher Carter, responsible for our main music this week. Of course, the late, great Shirley Walker was responsible for the very recognizable Superman theme composition. Man, this is another one. I gave music a 7. You gave it an 8. We get a bunch of great stuff here in the episode. You get the Lex theme. You get your Superman theme comes in at several different very important moments, including his initial arrival to stop the guys in the museum. Comes back later on when he's kind of hulking up, for lack of a better term, once the kryptonite is away and he's able to sort of handle the T-Rex. We get the triumphant Superman theme returns just before he rips the jaw off of the robot. But we also get some really unique pieces in the middle here. So we do get the Lex theme also plays on several occasions there, especially during or after the conversation between him and Superman and Lex outside his office. But I think the one that stood out for me, and maybe it did for you as well, is the jetpack chase sequence. What a crazy, like, big band sort of like roaring 20s, 30s, you know, big band theme that we had rolling for that little chase sequence there.
Yeah, it's great. That was what stood out to me. We were exchanging messages earlier before we recorded, and I said, like, coming into this, the two things that really stood out to me were or one of the things that really stood out to me was, I remember a super like big band brassy soundtrack for that whole chase sequence. And yeah, it's great. You know, you get the big horns and this, what sounds like a stand-up bass and a lot of fun percussion there. It's just got a really unique energy to it. And it's just complements that well. And I feel like maybe I was just looking for it. I didn't quite hear, it's not like the Jurassic Park theme, but the dinosaur kind of has its own theme.
It does.
As well.
Yep.
The notes sort of match its marches. So when the sound effect of the foot hits, that then, you know, that's when the note plays, and it kind of matches the tempo of how the thing walks and the sound effects of it walking really, really well as well. And they kind of mix that into the Superman theme at the end as well. So some really, really spectacular stuff here, I thought, from Mr. Carter.
Yeah. And that aforementioned, the sort of, it's not post credits, but it might as well be a post credit scene with the archaeological dig that's going on. There was some real ominous music that plays there when they cut to the little chunk of kryptonite that's sitting close to the dig. So I really liked that also. So I think if I had to do it over again, I'd probably bump this up to a 9, maybe even a 10. It's really strong. The thing that we've talked about, especially after we've done 307 prior episodes to this, when you look at when the great composers got the opportunity to really branch out and do something special for a certain sequence, like, of course, like the theme songs for our heroes are the things that we'll always remember, right? But then these little unique sequences where these pieces got written for this particular sequence, never heard again outside of on these replays, it's like, man, that is a really, really awesome piece that they decided for whatever reason to include. It's like looking at the, you know, Read My Lips, where they decided to do a similar like jazzy brass band type thing for, that was more jazz than brass band, but like those episodes where you get a unique soundtrack or a unique piece that may only play once or isn't necessarily a recurring theme, but really creates a really incredible atmosphere for that particular scene. This chase sequence, like the ante is upped. It's a great visually interesting looking scene, but I think the ante is upped purely on the soundtrack too. Like Mr. Carter did a great job at really giving that sequence a little extra oomph with that piece there. So yeah, I would probably give my music closer to a 9 or maybe even a 10 if I had to redo it.
Yeah, same. I just loved it. Like I said, there's a lot of unique sequences there. You get plenty of the Superman theme and the Lex theme, as you mentioned, in those scenes. But yeah, that, like I said, that super brassy big band swinging music that we get during that chase sequence, and then the very, very dramatic, more cinematic music I feel like you get in the dinosaur fight at the end is really, really tremendous as well. So not only this, but it, you know, a good variety throughout the episode kind of gives each act of the episode of, you know, has its own sort of unique musical identity.
Absolutely. Let's move on to our final category of the day, Liam, which is going to be our voice actors and actresses. And again, early on, I don't know, we would tend to kind of touch on the high points, maybe point out, you know, a good performance or talk about the main focus of the episode. So it'll be nice to kind of go through here and touch on some of our cameos. But we ended up having a pretty large cast when it came to this episode, despite the main focus being on just a few of the characters. But I guess we did have some of those supporting casts kind of filter in there throughout the story. So let's go ahead and talk about this week's voice cast and review our scores from the first time that we talked about it.
That's right. So we'll rapid fire through some of these folks, but we did... I just wanted to mention Tress McNeil, who plays both the waitress and the old woman who makes fun of Clark at the museum. I think she has a lot of, you know, unnamed lady roles in this series and others, but she's quite funny in that in that role. I thought we have John Gary playing I think some of the he's one of the other scientists and also the commissioner who's on top of the building with our jewel thieves. Speaking of which, we have Thomas F. Wilson as Joey. Folks in the DCAU world would know him, of course, as Tony Zucco in Robin's Reckoning parts 1 and 2. And I think he comes back and plays like a radio DJ. And it was also not too long ago, I think he was in a Zeta Project episode we reviewed. So
all over, of course, the DCAU.
Yes, but also just an incredibly recognizable voice as of course he's the man who played Biff Tannen in the Back to the Future movies and that has done some other recognizable voice work as well, and even was I think a featured character on one of the seasons of Legends of Tomorrow, one of the Arrowverse shows. So,
wow.
Very recognizable voice. It's hard for me in this context to not just hear Tony Zucco.
Agreed. I kept waiting for him to say, "Oh, I don't believe it."
Yes. worked in some sort of way for him to say it's the circus boy again would have been cool. But
you pays your monies and you takes your chance. One of those lines from Robin's Reckoning.
That's right. But to his credit, if you look at this in a vacuum, he's a perfect, like, you know, D-bag, muscle head, you know, toxic masculinity bro. Like, he's great at that. His interactions with Mercy, as we mentioned, played as mentioned for the first time at this point in the series by Lisa Edelstein, does a very good job there. She's very sort of dry and understated, so mm-hmm. playing off of Mr. Wilson's much more animated and over the top role is great. And then that sequence where once he realizes the game sort of and sees that the kryptonite is affecting Superman, he just can't help himself. And he has to show off, which I think is a pretty funny bit there. Other minor roles, of course, we have Victor Brandt as Professor Hamilton briefly. He's there to further expositionize our kryptonite. And of course, we do very briefly. I think he plays one other role. I think he's one of the. I think he might one be the first guy.
Yeah, he's the guy who doesn't stick his hand into the electricity.
That's right. He's the guy who says, "We'll send out some chicken soup."
Yeah,
and then he's also Bibbo, of course, Brad Garrett in just for literally one line. Like I said, he's just one of the other guys who shows up to tell Superman he doesn't look so good, which is a fantastic bit, as mentioned. That it just keeps coming back to that. But let's see, who else do we have here? And then, as mentioned, yes, Lisa Edelstein as Mercy Graves. I really like her. Like I said, I like how sort of quiet and understated she is, but you really get the sense of how much of a literal and figurative killer she is.
Yeah.
Like, she's very intimidating in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, really drives it home when she kicks the punching bag off and Lex says, "I don't think she's interested." It's just really, 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 really good. Yeah, she obviously gets more emotional play later on the further we get into the show. I think probably World's Finest, which at some point we will do a re-review of that one also, because mm-hmm. that was way early, but probably her largest role for that episode. So not a ton for her to do here, but again, you're establishing her as she may dress in a leather mini skirt outfit, but she's not somebody that you want to mess with. You might not, if you stick your hand out, you might come back with like a stub or something like that at that point. So just got to be careful around her. She's dangerous, and it comes across in her performance.
Absolutely. And then we have our three main leads to wrap it up. First and foremost, we'll just mention Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor. We've talked about him actually not too long ago. As mentioned, we just cracked into that final season of JLU, whereas we talked about he's sort of very manic and over the top, as he's had this connection to Brainiac that's been taken from him, and he's sort of gotten very desperate and so to go back to this moment where he's really at the pinnacle of his, like, his personal pride and his personal, like, self-belief, like, even mm-hmm. after having already met Superman's already foiled at least one of his nefarious plots, he's still at this point is like, "No, come on, I got you, go away, like,
right,
this is right, this is mine, all of this is mine, like, this city is mine." He said, I think he says, you kind of echo something he says in Last Son of Krypton, where he talks about, like, you know, "I own this city, and you can't, there's no way to punch your way out of this. Like, I got you."
Right.
So just leave me alone and we'll go our separate ways. And it, like, the frustration then he has at the end of the episode when good triumphs is it's just really good. Like, just a great he's so slimy and again very intimidating, especially when he's dealing with Peterson in that scene with Mercy, as mentioned.
Yeah, he's really, as you said, like, to compare it to what we most recently have reviewed on the show, where he's completely unhinged and, you know, he's talking to a Brainiac that doesn't exist, or you know, he's melded with Brainiac and he's just completely off his rocker, to this very, like, understated, unbothered, like, Superman irritates him, but he's not, he isn't worried. And it certainly doesn't show in the emotion that Lex has that he's even the slightest bit concerned that, you know, Superman is there. It's, this is a annoyance to him. This is an inconvenience to him. And he just wants to be done with it. He wants to throw his money at it or intimidate it into leaving him alone, like you said. So, and he's going to continue to do so. And the fact that Superman doesn't, you see a little bit at the end when he gets frustrated and smashes his computer. But for the most part, the entire episode, he's putting on this facade of like, I'm unbothered. This does leave me alone. I'm right. You just go mess with everybody else. I own this town. This is my town. Mm-hmm. This is my city. And nobody touches me because I'm Lex Luthor. I have all this money. So I think you can, it's hard to appreciate Clancy Brown more than we do, or his performance as much as we do. But I think when you go and you kind of put these different performances up, and you're like, man, this guy is so dynamic to be able to pull both of these off and make it so believable, and make it feel sort of like a linear timeline here where we have the result of him not being able to be successful leads him to being this madman down the road. But looking back, you can see he really pulls off like the subtleties, the unconcerned, unbothered version of Lex here at the beginning. And of course the later unhinged version too. So yeah, we can stand here and heap praise on Clancy Brown's performance all day long, but yeah, it's unsurprising. But I do like being able to look back here and say, hey, this is different than where we end up, and it makes sense story-wise.
Absolutely. And I realize I forgot to mention him when we were going over some of the supporting cast. Playing Professor Peterson, we had John Rubinstein. Not a ton of, a lot of like one-offs and sort of, you know, get sitcom guest star guy, probably a guy, if you saw his face, you'd know him. Mm-hmm. One of those, but you know, did have a recurring role on Star Trek, and more recently has worked on some other network television shows as well, like Young Sheldon. So yeah, I think he does a good job. He's we can kind of use him as a transition to talk about Dana Delaney's performance as
well. Well, before you do that, the DCA Wiki has an interesting tidbit about his life, by the way. It says from 2014 to 2016, he co-starred with Adrian Barbeau in a touring production of Stephen Schwartz's musical Pippin. So a DCAU connection continued long after his performance as Professor Peterson. Go figure. Six degrees of DCAU voice casting.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great note there. And but yeah, I think he does a good job. But then, yes, that kind of is a little way to transition to talking about Dan Delaney's Lois Lane again, for being, I feel like we keep coming back to that, for being so early on in the series, she just has it nailed. Again, what we talked about in plot and visuals like this. She's so, one, this episode shows off what a good, actual like good reporter she is as far as chasing down leads, getting under the skin of powerful people. Like she's you know, and then on the other hand, it shows her that range of how focused she is on solving this. Like she knows there's a mystery, something happened with Superman at this museum, she's hot on the trail, she's got her source at LexCorp, she takes it to you know, to Star Labs. I love the scene in the diner. I think that's a lot of fun. So as good. Well, and then yeah, you have the end there with her in the museum and everything. I think that is I think it's, like I said, just the way, it's very clear to me that how well she had this figured out. And, you know, credit to her as an actor, credit to Andrea Romano as the voice director. Just she had it nailed. Like this furious independence and bravery that both gets her into these crazy situations, but ultimately allows her in this case to save the day ultimately. Just great stuff. Can't say enough good things about her. Again, that one that we always heap praise on. But I think these early episodes where you actually really got to focus in, she's not just there to bounce a couple lines of dialogue and then Clark leaves her behind to go investigate or whatever. It's fun to see her have such a, you know, forefront role.
Yeah, no, we get, I mean, and you get to see her interact with both Clark and Superman and the different dynamics there. As you mm-hmm. mentioned, Professor Hamilton, Professor Peterson, you get a lot of different interactions here. So she plays it well. And as we said, like, very important, you have to have a dynamic voice to be able to pull off the fact that this woman, who is sometimes a damsel in distress, but oftentimes is a badass that stands up and is able to hold her own in a lot of situations that a normal person wouldn't be. You have to have a voice that communicates that. And Miss Delaney has always been able to do that. And which is why she's our hashtag our Lois. So yeah, a really good showcase for her for this episode, I would say. Definitely one where if I'm like, hey, you know, what's a good Lois Lane episode to really kind of understand the DCAU personification of her? This is a pretty good one all the way around, because it you get to see the way that they characterized her. You get a great performance from Miss Delaney. She's funny in certain sequences. She's kind of, you know, dismissive of Clark, which was a series regular thing. And then, of course, you know, being involved in the dangerous situation at the end, but still being able to help Superman and ultimately save him is a pretty unique look at it. So great job from Miss Delaney for sure.
Absolutely. And then finally here, we of course have Tim Daly as Superman. Early days here, I feel like we talked a lot in those early episodes. One of the only things I do remember is that we felt maybe he was a little wooden, but I gotta say, maybe we just have a better gauge on the way that Tim played him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just always had this very stoic quality to his Superman. But I especially in that scene with him and Luthor, I was like, he's pretty good in this episode. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't think it's like, I don't necessarily know that I would put it on like the, you know, the top five best Tim Daly Superman performances or anything, but I think he's pretty solid there. He's experiencing, really at this point, as far as we know, for the first time in his life, is experiencing some sort of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't he, I feel like he has a real sort of like panic to his voice in those early scenes when he's being affected. And again, he's just sort of, you know, overwhelmed by the whole thing. And then finally in that final bit there, but yeah, again, it all really just comes down to, I don't think there's a lot of like all time great moments for him, for his Superman in this episode. But again, that scene of him and Clancy Brown, Lex, going back and forth in the at LexCorp is just so good, and that really stood out to me. Just that final line of, you know, you'll never control me, and then he, you know, flies off out of the window. I think it's good. Like, I feel like I appreciate some of these earlier performances just because I feel like I have a better grasp on what he was doing with the character than maybe we didn't necessarily, or I didn't at least appreciate at the time.
Yeah, I agree. I think we were pretty critical in those early episodes of Tim Daly. But I think it's just, yeah, I think maybe now that we've heard some of the more dynamic episodes and we know his range and sort of what he maybe was trying to go for, as you said, he's still young in his career as Superman, where he's still experiencing new things. This episode, even though obviously Superman has to be saved by Lois, I think they handled the whole weakness thing. It doesn't make him look like a wimp, you know, which was obviously one of the bigger complaints early on, both this and in Justice League, that he's kind of like, you kind of got to make him human a little bit. So he doesn't come off like a wimp, which I like. And some of that has to come out of that performance. As like you said, he's experiencing pain and weakness and confused about like what he's experiencing. I think his turn as Clark is really good. The, as you mentioned, the diner scene with him and Lois it's a quick scene, but it's spectacular. Just the back and forth that they have about the kryptonite chunk and him trying to excuse why he's got butterfingers and all that. So yeah, I think, maybe looking back, I don't know if this is one that we would have been as harsh. Hopefully we weren't. and not that we were ever terribly, or we didn't give him a failing grade or anything like that.
Right, right.
But I think you're right. We were a little bit like, yeah, it just seems a little wooden. But this wouldn't be one that I would necessarily classify that, kind of looking back now. So I agreed that it's a pretty solid. And that Lex hit, the scene with him and Lex is absolutely fantastic. As unsurprisingly, anytime those two got into a recording booth together, that, mm-hmm. you know, it just raised the stakes. our original scores for voice acting were, I gave it a 7 and you gave it a 6.
Wow.
So I probably, again, to waffle over a 7 or an 8, I'd probably stick with a 7. But I, you know, I could have given it an 8 probably also, because it's, you know, maybe based solely on Clancy Brown's Luthor and Dana Delaney's Lois Lane. Both really fun in this episode.
Yeah, definitely a very strong Lex and Lois episode. I think I would probably settle around an 8. I think that's about where I go. Like I said, I don't think it's an all-time great performance from Tim Daly, but I think he's solid. And like I said, some of your bit players that are there just to kind of give a punchline or something like that do a good job as well. So yeah, definitely a lot to like there.
So you gave it originally a 29. I gave it a 28. So not anywhere close to our top picks section. So looking back with our, you know, if we changed our scores, it would probably be in the low 30s. So a little bit better, maybe more of a passing grade, a B plus instead of a B minus or something like that. Mm-hmm. But one of the innovations that we've done since we reviewed this way back when and 6 years ago, is the rewatchability factor, which it's kind of silly when we're literally rewatching it for our podcast to argue about rewatchability or to state it. But I guess that's part of why we're going back to these. It's like, hey, now we can kind of classify this as a, you know, is this one that's important? I think it is, because it's the first episode of Kryptonite appearing in the DCAU.
Yeah, that feels kind of a no-brainer. I think this is
introduction of Mercy also. Mm-hmm. Yet you know, who plays a big role in the DCAU. Some good Lex. You really kind of understand a little bit more the Lex character. Obviously, you get a somewhat of an introduction in Last Son of Krypton with him sabotaging his own military weapon, but this really kind of gives you another look into the side of Lex, what he controls, his desire to control Superman. And if he can't control him, he's going to eliminate him, and how he can go about doing that. I think I would probably give this 2 thumbs up for rewatchability. It's a good episode, some good action. Superman fights a giant robot dinosaur at the end. Like, what's the dislike?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, I think, one of the easier 2 thumbs up we'll ever have on this show. Just fun episode, important to this series as a whole, and important to the larger DCAU as a whole, as we just talked about. There's giant mounds of kryptonite and giant jade green dragon statues of kryptonite to be found in future episodes, and it all starts here. So it checks all the boxes for an important episode of the series and of the DCAU as a whole.
There you go. All right, man, let's begin to wrap things up this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this re-review. If you liked this episode, if you didn't like this episode, we would love to hear your thoughts. Make sure you chime in. Let us know your thoughts. Contact us on social media at DCAUReview, Twitter/X, and on Instagram. We're also on Threads. And probably on Facebook still, but we really don't use Facebook now. So, we would love for you to support the podcast. If you did like the episode, lots of different ways you can do that. The main easiest way to do so is whatever podcast app you're listening on that allows you to leave a 5-star review, drop a 5-star. We have a ton. We have more 5-star reviews on Spotify. I just checked for the first time the other day. It was a shockingly high amount of 5-star reviews. We've got a perfect 5 rating and a lot of reviews. It doesn't let you leave a blurb about us, but it lets you leave a 5-star review. So thank you. That helps us out. That's our main avenue for listening, is Spotify listeners. So thank you to those of you who have done that. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, as we say each and every week, you can leave a little blurb. They do let you leave a little thing, whatever you like about the podcast, when you're dropping your review. If you leave a review and we read it on the air, and you live within the continental United States, we'll send you a thank you gift. So a little bribery to go ahead and drop yourself a review there if you've not done so and you listen on Apple Podcasts. So Thank you to those that have done that and continue to do that and will do that. And if you want to support the podcast monetarily, there's a couple different ways to do that, including checking out the show notes, which has a link to our store to buy yourself a piece of merchandise, or you can become a monthly supporter like several of our listeners already have. We thank you to those that do give us their hard-earned dollars. It helps late on a Friday night when I'm editing the podcast, or on the off chance that I'm sick and Liam has to edit the podcast. It gives us a little bit of extra oomph there when we got the caffeine flowing. So thank you to those that do support us on a monthly basis. Liam, we are continuing next week with our month of Superman reviews. And guess what? As we talked about, very little content left that we have not previously covered. So you know what? We decided to go into our bag of tricks. And we've been spitballing and sort of brainstorming some new concepts here. And every now and then we land on one that we're like, you know what? This might actually work. So next week, for the very first time, we're going to introduce a brand new concept called Versus, patent pending, that's going to hit a couple of different characters against each other. We're going to kind of talk about their story arcs, maybe their voice actors, maybe their music. We're going to pit two of them against each other, and you and I are kind of going to sit down and decide who had the better time in the DCAU. Who's the better character? Who had the better theme? Who had the better voice actor? Who's the better personification classically versus its comic version? We're going to talk all about that in this exciting new Versus format. It's going to be fun. It's going to be different. It's going to be unique, but it's going to still have that same breakdown and covering of the different things that make up these characters that are so important. And we're going to start with a couple of Superman characters next week. So our listeners are not going to want to miss that.
That's right, Cal. We are debuting a new concept, sort of a sister show to the character spotlights, but maybe for characters as that don't have as many extracurricular items, merch and such, but still deserve a little bit more of a thorough re-examining. We're going to pit two characters against each other in a very fun new series that we're calling Meta Brawl. Our original name. We didn't steal it from that Justice League episode. And yes, we are debuting the first episode of DCAU Reviews Meta Brawl, Parasite versus Livewire, next week on the show.
Can't wait, Liam. It's going to be an excellent time. We look forward to getting some feedback from the listeners on their thoughts. It's going to be a unique new concept and one that I'm excited to explore with you. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.